everybody. Welcome back to Film 45. It's episode 11. Appreciate you tuning in. Today, we are talking with Jason Schumacher. He is a filmmaker who wears many hats. He assists, he shoots, he edits, and most recently, he did a short that's amazing called Sad Clown. Prior to that, he had a feature called The Telephone Game. Maybe you've seen one or both of those. But today, we're going to sit down and find out what makes him tick and kind of what he thinks about the state of the state here in the North.
You're listening to Film 45.
All right, everybody, the big news this week is the grand reopening of IFP Minnesota. And there's a three-day celebration going on at the new center, which is located at 550 Vandalia Street, Suite 120, St. Paul, Minnesota. Basically, it's just a few blocks east of the old location, right near Crete and Vandalia. Super easy to get in and out of, and plenty of free parking. So Friday night, August 21st, 6 to 9 p.m., there's a free event. It's the grand opening of the Ann Marsden Gus Gustafson Gallery. And there'll be wine and beer and snacks during this open house. So swing by Friday night, check that out. The next day, Saturday, get all fancy and get your tickets to attend the grand opening gala. There'll be special guests. There'll be open bar. There'll be food. The guests include Maria Bozzi of Los Angeles Film Independent, Sean McManus from IFP New York, and the event is being covered by Filmmaker Magazine's own Scott McCauley. So grab your tickets at ifpmn.org, and remember that $75 of the ticket price is tax deductible, and that's going to be fun, so dress up for that. If you can't make either of those, Sunday, another free event on August 23rd from 12 to 4 p.m., just an open house, a very casual hangout, have a drink, check out the facilities, and sign up to be a member if you're not already. All right, so again, get those tickets and find out all the pertinent details at ifpmn.org. We'll see you there. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hey. Jason, you and I, we've worked together on a bunch of projects, small indie projects, commercial projects, kind of all kinds of things. And you're a filmmaker that wears a lot of hats. So why don't you tell our audience kind of who you are and what your areas of expertise include?
Well, yeah, I've been doing film stuff for over 10 years. I got into it in a video class in high school, fell in love with it, decided to go to college for it. Went to UW-Milwaukee, a very experimental film school, where I learned learned a lot of things, saw a lot of weird things. And I dabbled in special effects for a while, practical effects like snow and rain. Did that on North Country. Used the money from that to make my first little feature called Stimulus, which was kind of just about my post high school experience, sort of coming of age story. And since then, I've been directing a lot of projects and moving more lately into directing and producing. I've also shot. I've also edited. I've been in AC. And then the special effects stuff. So, which actually all that stuff is really good training to do producing and directing. You get familiar with the way different departments work and how to, like, you know, have them coexist and operate hopefully as efficiently as possible together. So,
And to know whether you want to continue to wear that hat or to hire it out.
That's
an important lesson to learn.
Yeah, I've been passing on a lot of the editing lately so I can spend more time on set.
Yeah. Okay, so your first film was how many years ago? 10 years ago?
Yeah, about 11 now, actually.
11, yep. Okay. And give us a quick synopsis of, it's called Stimulus, right?
Stimulus, yeah. It's about two guys coming out of high school and trying to figure out what to do with their lives. One of them just works kind of dead-end at a coffee shop and is just still nostalgic for his high school days. And the other guy gets roped into like a get-rich-quick pyramid scheme because he's looking for a job, and that's like the first thing that pops up. And so he's like, okay, I'm going to be an adult now, and I'm going to go and, you know, I'm going to be a businessman, but of course it's all a sham.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And is that film available online anywhere, or is that like your...
your student film that no one ever sees kind of scenario?
No, you can watch it for free on IMDb, actually. You can stream it there.
All right.
It's a first film, but it's got a lot of little things in there that I still like.
Yeah. Why streaming on IMDb?
I think I was just looking for distribution for a while, and nothing was really biting. This was before there were a lot more avenues like iTunes and stuff like that readily available. So I was just like, I wanted it to have a home somewhere. And so I was just like, well, I'm just going to let it be on IMDb for free.
Cool. Okay. And then what did that lead to? That led to your second feature?
Yeah. So my second feature is a little different. It's The Telephone Game, which actually comes out on iTunes tomorrow. Should be up there August 19th. But it's an entirely improvised piece. So we wrote out a structure, wrote out a treatment, character outlines, but I really wanted to experiment with improv. That's something else I kind of fell in love with in high school and wanted to revisit. And that was an interesting challenge because I think I learned a lot about editing doing that piece, about different ways you can mix shots, change a scene, because it was all improvised. Every take was completely different. And so, yeah, you had to get really creative to make it all kind of come together. It's like part documentary, part narrative.
And what was your post-process like with that kind of approach to a film? Was it 10 times longer than you thought it would be, or?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was just a number I threw out. I don't know.
That might not be too off base. I mean, I spent probably two and a half years editing it, of course, between other jobs and stuff.
Yeah.
To pay the bills. But, you know, I recently have edited a feature that was scripted in about 2 months. We have a rough cut together. So.
Nice. Yeah.
Just a lot more time.
Yeah. And would you repeat that process again, do you think?
I don't know. I think if I were to use improv, I would want to do it a little more like Scorsese does, where he improvises during the rehearsals and then borrows some of that and reincorporates it into the script.
Yeah. So you get the more, the genuine things the character would say that rings truer maybe than the contrived words of the script writer.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes you find that less is more, or sometimes more is more, or, you know, something just comes out of an actor when they're just completely in it, or they forget their line in rehearsal and they just say something and you're like, oh, that's actually better than what I wrote. And
yeah.
Might as well use it. Like, you know, it's kind of when you're the director, you a good idea can come from anywhere and it's kind of your job to just grab onto it. Doesn't have to be your idea.
Yep. Yep. And what's been the release experience with The Telephone Game?
We hired a producer's rep to try to get like a more conventional distribution, and nobody was biting. I mean, it is kind of a unique piece. It's sort of a niche within a niche experimental feature. But we ended up talking to a company called Indie Film Rights that is got it up on iTunes, and it's also going to be on Xbox and PlayStation's video players eventually.
Cool. Cool. And how do you find their setup in terms of like business? Is it pretty filmmaker friendly? Most of the cuts going to you?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty much it's like it's pretty much a normal iTunes agreement, whatever that is.
Yeah, I don't like 70-30 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
And again, it was a place where I was like, man, I got this project and I just want to get it a home and move on to the next thing. So I've learned a lot from just that experience and what to do differently. And I definitely say I want to, I think every filmmaker needs to just set aside more money for the end,
yeah,
for the marketing, for the promotion, for also trying to outsource some of that help, because it is hard to do it all on your own, just like it's hard to do everything on set on your own.
Yes.
You know, you could do it, but you shouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm in 100% agreement with you there. You read about it all the time. People are like, oh, you should be saving 20%, 50% of your budget for P&A, for mm-hmm. releasing it and distribution and all that. And it's like, no, that's money I need to put on camera, you know? And
right. We'll figure that part out later.
But right.
Then by the time you get to that point, you're so worn out and broke that you're like, well,
there's nothing left. So yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's just, until you know what it takes, you don't know what it takes, because it's like, okay, well, you could hire out the closed captioning. You could hire mm-hmm. out the DCP creation, and you probably should. Mm-hmm. You could hire out, getting it onto the various platforms,
right.
or you could do it yourself.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. doing it yourself is like, you know, it's a nightmare. It's like everything takes a couple of weeks, and all those weeks add up to a couple of months, and all those months add up to thousands more dollars. And
yeah, and at that point, you start just get itching to do your next project, but you also want to do right by your last project and actually, you know, get it out there for people to see.
You don't want to be the statistical, you know, one and done, as so many indie filmmakers. I don't remember what the stat is, but you know, yeah. they do one feature length film and then they're out, and it's because of this part of the process that we're talking about.
Right. I mean, you have to think, you still have to put on that business hat and think about sustainability. You know, how are you going to sustain as a filmmaker and as an artist, and like really, mm-hmm. you know, kind of manage your resources so that you don't, there's a lot of stories of people who kind of like bet their whole existence on the film and it worked out, but there's a lot of stories that you don't hear where it didn't work out.
Yeah.
You know? I think
a magnitude of more probably of that latter.
Right.
Didn't work out.
But it makes a great story. Like, oh yeah, I just got every credit card I could and, but like,
don't do that.
But even Kevin Smith says now, like, he's like, the way I did Clerks just wouldn't work now. Like you just mm-hmm. can't do it that way.
So yeah. So, well, and so, somewhat similar to my path, you've done two features and now you've recently done a short, and
yeah,
I did two features and then a short. Like, are we doing it backwards? I mean, isn't it supposed to be the other way around? You should do shorts first before doing features. Why do you think it is in your case you tackle the feature?
I think that's just, you know, I'd heard all those, you know, you hear all these stories about somebody just makes a feature and it takes off. And so I think I just wanted to make a feature at that time. And I had this idea that was sort of a feature length idea. And so we made it for almost no money, you know, both of those films, Stimulus and The Telephone Game. And I think with doing Sad Clown, which is the short I did recently, I think I just wanted to put a lot of resources into something a little more manageable, like smaller in scale, and just do that really well. Show people what kind of production quality that I could do with some resources. You know, if you spread those resources out across a feature, then it's, you know, gets pretty tight. But if you kind of put it all into a short and kind of build and make sure every moment's working, then you can really up your production quality. And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to have a short calling card piece. You know, and I also had a script that I liked, and I was like, this idea works as a short, it's not a feature,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to make it, but the sort of sustainability goal or just the artistic goal was to have a grant piece or a show piece that says, here's what I can do, you know?
Yeah. And I've seen Sad Clown, and you've succeeded on every level, I would say. I mean, you do have extremely high appearing production value. You have a great tight story. You know, I don't know. There's nothing I would change about it. You know, I mean, so many times you're like, well, it could be a little shorter, you know, or whatever, you know, the typical right. things that you get, when you release something out in the world. But I think you've really done a bang up job on Sad Clown. And that's a recent production, and it's been out at some festivals. How many festivals has Sad Clown been at now?
Put
you on the spot here.
Quite a few. Let's see if I can remember. Well, we did the Cannes Short Film Corner. We were in the Pasadena International Film Festival. We screened as part of the Holly Shorts, which is cool because it's at the historic Chinese Theater in Hollywood where they have all the handprints.
Yeah, Holly Shorts, they always put out a good program every year.
Yeah, and we did. We won the audience award at the Twin Cities Film Festival, which is where we debuted. And then we also did the Waiwega and the Wild Rose.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so what do you think? You still have a few months of festival life for that film?
Yeah, probably? We've been sending it out to just a few more before we're going to try to figure out what's next for it. And then, you know, sending out our Kickstarter awards, fulfilling all that. So
yeah.
We've got DVDs printed to send our backers and digital copies. So it's winding down. It's festival run.
Yeah. Now who was on your production team on that film? Because I just feel like literally you jumped like several bars up with this production, and like it's obvious what you set out to do, you achieved. So right. Like, you know, give out some props to who else was
kind of our
you.
no compromises movie.
Yeah.
Well, I co-wrote it with Jesse Frankson, who I've been making up stories with since the second grade. And he also plays the sad clown. And he co-wrote it with me. Alex Schwant shot it, who's an excellent DP in town. Adam Zulke, who's a local filmmaker and producer, produced it. And Sherry Anderson, who you've worked with many times, did the yep. production design, which I think is also a huge part of the film and something we had a lot of fun with.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy working with Sherry because she, I feel like she brings, and we got to have her on the show. I feel yes. like she brings this this approach that it's not too precious, it's not too high strung.
Yeah.
You know, it's low key, but it's the right amount and it mm-hmm. and it's effective, you know? I don't know. I'm lacking for words at the moment, but I I'm always impressed and I like working with her. So
yeah. And she did a great job on Sad Clown and just finding all the kitschy, strange retro yeah. things. And, you know, those really helped build the world and set the mood. And, you know, we were trying to put a history to, even though we just see like a little slice of behind the scenes, put a history to this circus, you know, group, this, you know, circus company or whatever. And so we made posters for some of their old shows and we, you know, we had different props around the room so you could kind of put together what some of them might do. And if you look closely, there's just all kinds of little things in the background that give you an idea of what their show might be like, even though you never actually see the show that it's building to.
Yeah. And now there's a public perception about clowns, sometimes a stereotype that mm-hmm. they're icky or scary. So your film is none of those things, I would say.
No.
So how do you have to deal with that? Is that a factor, do you think? Do you yeah. have a harder sell when do you
it
get
was
people
a hard
going
sell.
Oh, clowns, I don't like clowns.
Before we move off of shout outs too, I got a shout out to okay. Nicole Fay, our makeup artist, who did a great job with the makeup with everybody. And that was definitely like a conversation we had. Was to make sure that his makeup wasn't creepy, that he looked, you know, approachable and friendly. And yeah, there is this, you know, since it in the 80s, clowns have mostly just appeared in horror movies. And we really wanted to do more of like a kind of a Fellini thing about these, you know, vaudeville kind of stage performers that had just been doing it for a while. And this was their thing. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff in the film about sort of portraying emotions versus bottling them in and identity and stuff like that. So to have someone heavily make up like a clown was a great character to put or to build those kind of themes around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I encourage all of you to seek out Sad Clown because it'll kind of knock your socks off. It's good.
Thank you. So,
you're currently working on someone else's feature project. Why don't you talk about that? Because I know you're putting a lot of work into that on the back end here.
Yeah, we just wrapped production about a month ago on a feature film called Twin Cities that's written and directed by David Ash, and I was the producer on that. And yeah, it was my first time just as the producer on a feature, just hiring all the crew and just making sure we were as set up for each day as we could be. And, you know, I cast a lot of the extras and it was an interesting experience. It was a challenging experience and to try to, you know, not to offer up ideas, but not step on the director's vision, you know, offer problems to solutions and, you know, try not to step on too many toes.
You said you were offering problems to solutions. Did you mean to say that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure I did that too, but I meant solutions to problems. Hopefully, I did that.
Yeah, we understood. Yeah, and that's you're wrapping up the post on Twin Cities right now.
Yeah, I'm also supervising the post as the producer. Okay. Kind of taking on a lot of different types of producers. You know, sometimes on a bigger production, those get broken apart, mm-hmm. but on an indie feature, they all kind of blend together.
Yeah. And then go ahead and quick tell us about the doc you have in progress too. This is your own project.
Yeah, well, I kind of came on partway through. They'd already shot a fair amount of stuff and were looking for someone to kind of wrap it up, and I ended up going back and shooting more. It's a documentary about competitive skydiving, which is just something that a lot of people don't know even exists.
Yeah. What does that mean? Competitive skydiving? Like, is it a skills-based thing or?
Yeah. So they're basically, the particular team that we follow is a four-way competitive, team. And so there's four people and a cameraman that jump, and they have a series of formations that they have to do in the 45 seconds before they have to open their parachute, from exiting the plane to parachute. So they try to do as many formations as they can, and they're judged based on the video that their camera guy takes. And I think that was one of the big things that drew me to this piece, was the camera guy, that he's an official member of the team. And I don't know of any other sports like that where your camera guy can actually lose you points if he screws up.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
And just the footage that he takes and the footage you can get as a skydiver, you know, you're working in a 360-degree space. He can float around. He can, you know, he can dive down. He can move this way and that way. And is also kind of having to judge, because he doesn't have a viewfinder. He's got kind of almost like a crosshairs.
Oh, okay.
To just help
yeah.
center his frame, and often will jump with more than one camera on his head to document the jumps and the formations that they're doing.
Wow, that's crazy. So, yeah, it would be like, I guess, if you were a synchronized swimmer and you had somebody under the water with you, who would they would also be on your team, but that doesn't happen. So
right.
Yeah. Is there any other, there is no other sport,
I don't think
is there?
So. I don't think there's any other sport like that.
That is super interesting. So what stage are you at with that doc?
We're pretty close to having a picture lock, and then we'll move into sound design and scoring.
And are you hoping for a spring release on that maybe, or festival run, I should say, maybe?
Yeah, we're definitely trying to wrap things up in the fall and then kind of look at where we want to take it through the winter and into the spring.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds super interesting. And what was the working title on that film again?
It's called Beyond the Thrill.
Beyond the Thrill. Okay.
And then that concept is about people who skydive more than the one-time bucket list kind of thing. These skydivers have jumped 5,000-6,000 times.
Wow.
So.
Wow. Cool. Well, okay. So with all these projects, what would you say is the state of the indie festival world right now?
Well, it's sort of a mixed bag, you know. It's really fun when you get out to the festivals, and it's also really frustrating when you don't make it into a festival and you're like, well, this film is perfect for this festival. Why didn't I get in? And maybe they're putting more priority on their local films, or maybe, you know, this and that. Maybe they don't like clowns. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's a weird kind of wild west of just like, you know, where do I put this film where people can see it in public? Mm-hmm. And obviously there's the argument now that, you know, you can just put it online and right. hundreds and thousands of people can see it.
Yeah.
Versus a film festival where you're sitting there and maybe, if you're lucky, 300 people will fill the theater and see it.
Right. That's a valid argument. I mean, there are pros and cons to both, but you know, if you're on the festival circuit and you're out at 6 to 12 festivals a year, you know, you might have a low few thousand viewers of your film.
Right.
And that takes you all those months, whereas you could go to one online platform and get that in a week,
yeah,
perhaps,
all over,
you know,
the world.
Yeah, the whole world. So, but YouTube doesn't give out laurels. So, yeah. and the press coverage and the experience of interfacing with the public and the festival directors and and other industry
the fun
people.
Parties and
yeah, yeah. YouTube doesn't throw fun parties for you and me. I mean, maybe if you're at Makerspace in LA or whatever. But yeah, yeah. So yeah. Do you have any plans to try some different hybrid distribution methods? Or
it's definitely something I've been looking into, and I know you and I have had conversations about in the past. Like I know Vimeo has a bunch of ways that you can set up and do a paper download.
Yeah,
you can do it on iTunes now. There's just a lot of interesting ways you can get your movie out there, and it's always hard to pinpoint what's the right one for your movie. And like, is it something that would get shared on YouTube, or is it more of like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And you see these success stories of a movie like Indie Game, and it's like, that was a huge success, indie gaming documentary.
Yeah.
About game developers. But, you know, it was able to take advantage of these digital platforms where the gamers are, and
right.
And you know, that was a perfect fit there. But oftentimes that particular movie is kind of touted as a success case, and it's like, well, yeah, but the subject matter, you know, had a big part of that, in my opinion. And Sad Clown or Death the Prom, like,
right,
that's not the same audience, so I can't repeat that. You can't repeat that exact thing necessarily.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's like, it's really hard to see, to look at what models to try to follow or try to repeat that other filmmakers have done, because it's changing so quickly all the time. But the best sort of marketing and promotional advice I ever heard was like, I was at a conference, and they asked a filmmaker, what's your audience for this movie? And they're like, you know, people 25 to 35. And they're like, oh, so is your marketing budget several million dollars? Because that's a huge market that you're trying to access.
Yeah.
And she says, you really got to narrow down your niche more and let it branch out from your core niche audience.
Right.
And something like Beyond the Thrill, that's something that we want to make sure skydivers, people that are passionate about skydiving, know about first. And hopefully let that branch out to people that are just curious about it. Maybe you want to try a jump, or they're just interested in the subject, or, mm-hmm. you know, just want to learn something about something that they don't know anything about. But you really kind of have to take the rifle approach, not the shotgun approach.
Yeah.
You get a zero in.
Yeah.
And so.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we all want our films to have the shotgun approach right off the bat and sure. be wildly successful. But yeah, it just doesn't make any sense to even try that. The rifle approach is much better. And I would say it's also better because that, you know, if it's about a certain group of people and you give it to those certain group of people, well, of course they're interested in it because they're interested in the topic, but they also might become like your super fans, you
exactly.
know,
and they then can be your biggest advocates.
And yeah, exactly. They're more than happy to promote the crap out of it then, you know, and share it with all of their buddies and friends who, you know, are like, oh, you're doing that competitive skydiving thing again. Like, well, yeah, well, watch this movie that just came out. It's awesome. You know?
Yeah.
So.
Right. I can help.
So I can't take you with me. So watch this movie. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, it's something that, yeah, can bring, you know, understanding to a certain topic that people might not know as much about, which is, you know, a great thing about film. And I mean, yeah, if you have something that's like topical or relevant or just, you know, has a core audience, you're definitely gonna have an easier time.
And probably more fun of a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Sad Clown was pretty fun, but it is sort of still kind of a strange niche audience that we have to find. So but we've started to talk to the different clown associations and share it with them a little bit. So we're just kind of waiting to hear back from some of them too, to see what they thought.
Yeah. Interesting. How many clown associations are there?
There's quite a few. There is like there's the World Clown Association, and then there are, there's all kinds of fundraising groups, and there's still a lot of people that are clowns out in the world.
Awesome.
Despite popular culture making it seem, I don't know.
All right. So a question I like to throw out to everybody, since this is a show about the North, what do you think the current state of filmmaking is in the North? Do you have any pros or cons about it? Things you want to share?
It seems to be getting better. I think just since I've been in it, the quality's gone up. There's been more and more films shooting here lately. They're not huge Hollywood films, but we just had Wilson, which had Laura Dern and Woody Harrelson film here. We had Kumiko the Treasure Hunter and Dear White People that did well on the festival circuit.
Both you should see if you haven't already.
Yeah, I got a chance to work on Kumiko for a couple days and got to bury the lead actress in the snow. It's like that one day I buried an Academy Award nominated actress in the snow. Nice. So yeah, I think it is getting better, and I would just love to see more projects branch out and get seen outside of the Midwest to you know, continue to reach out and do festivals or just get out online.
Is there one particular thing we all collectively could be doing better?
I think get more feedback on your films at every stage. That's something that I really tried to make a point to do with Sad Clown 2, and something I did not do enough in the past was to send my script to a bunch of people that I trusted and get constructive criticism and get ideas and get feedback. And then as I edited, you know, I got feedback there. It was like, what's working, what's not working? Because sometimes you work on a project so long, it all just kind of, it blends together to you, and you've got to take a step back and see it through somebody else's eyes. And you're really like, oh yeah, I guess you don't need that scene. Like, and then you take it out and the whole movie becomes stronger because you tightened it up.
Yeah.
And make your shorts shorter.
Yeah.
That's my other word of advice. Could it be shorter? And if so, make it shorter.
I think that's great advice. I you know, we should all try that just in general. Just make everything a little bit shorter and tighter and see what happens. Right. Why not? I mean, I love a good 3-hour movie, but
yeah, I mean, I do too. But when you're trying to break out, when you don't have like the brand recognition or you know, the actor recognition or something, you've got to reel people in and wow them quickly.
Yeah,
I think. You know, it doesn't need to be totally spastic. You can still do a mood piece or something, but you also don't want to bog down your film with unnecessary stuff that read well on paper, or you're like, well, you know, I kind of like what the actor did there, but do you need it? I don't know. Try it without it and see how it plays.
Right. All right. So where do people track you down online to follow you and see your work?
Well, my website is just my name, jasonschumacher.com, and you can stay tuned for The Telephone Game and Sad Clown. You can follow those on Facebook if you look them up. Okay. Telephone Game movie and Sad Clown movie will pop up there.
All right, we'll put the links to all your projects in the show notes so people can follow along at home. And I guess they can track you down on Facebook. Are you on Twitter at all? Or?
I am. I'm DuckDuckGray on Twitter.
All right. And you post stuff all the time. So you can track Jason down and see his work. Do you have any upcoming screenings in the next month or two that people could get on, or are you just in process on everything?
Oh, I'm mostly in post on projects right now. Yeah. So like the Facebooks and stay tuned for these big projects and their releases.
All right. And then look on the streaming platforms for his releases forthcoming in short order. So, Jason, thanks for taking time to chat with me today. Appreciate having you on the show.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right. Thanks for being on the show, Jason. Make sure you check the show notes to find all the web links for his projects and website and follow him. He's an active guy. You'll probably see him around town or at a local festival. If you chat with him publicly, you know, maybe ask him about games. He seems to have a pretty good grasp about the board game world, and maybe he'll take you on in a match. As always, we do appreciate your feedback and your reviews. Please go over to iTunes and give us a rating and spread the word. And our theme music is by Chooch.
This has been a Film 45 podcast.